Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Adam Sterling with you once again on CFAX 1070. This is Tuesday, June 28th of the year 2022. Lots to talk about on the show today, as always. Finally, hot weather back here on South Vancouver Island. I know many folks had been less than satisfied with the amount of rain that we had been seeing around here through much of the spring and actually into the summer months, technically, although the sunshine is back. But I don't know about you. For me, the heat takes on a completely different characteristic and quality this year than it did prior to the heat dome event. Of course, the last time we had a major heat wave here in Victoria, 24 people in this city died. 24 human beings lost their lives during an adverse weather event. If that was a blizzard where 24 people froze to death and we found them like that afterwards, I think that we would be speaking about it in hushed tones and we would grieve the losses that we suffered during that. It seems that for whatever reason, though, we don't take heat and the danger that the heat can cause and the prospect of additional heat waves nearly as seriously as we would if we had a situation where there was a huge snowstorm and 24 people froze to death in their homes. CTV had this coverage last night of the heat wave. We also had a representative of BC Ambulance Paramedics now more than or 1 year later after going through that traumatic event. Paramedics, of course, being those who came across many of these tragic cases in this community as well as communities across BC. Here's what the coverage last night sounded like.
A wave of heat has been washing over the province, including Vancouver Island, for the past few days.
I love it.
It's welcome weather for many after a spring that felt more like winter.
A long couple months of rain and cloud, and we're enjoying the beach.
The high temperatures arrived Friday and amped up this weekend, 1 year after BC's heat dome began, that brought record temperatures and claimed more than 600 lives, many of them vulnerable elderly people. The same demographic that found this weekend too toasty.
I like the heat if there's a breeze, but it was a little bit too hot.
At James Bay's New Horizons Senior Center, they're glad it's not so hot this time around. Still, staff are taking extra safety steps.
We're more aware that people are staying home alone and not necessarily going out, so we do a little checkup system.
That preparation seemingly across the board. At this hardware store, air conditioners have been going out the door in droves since January.
We probably have sold more air conditioners this year than we've sold in the last 10 years.
For the homeless, another group susceptible to the heat, the absence of COVID restrictions this summer has helped.
So we can have, you know, well over 100 people.
There's Grant McKenzie, our place.
In their drop-in space, which is air-conditioned, which is cool.
Many say better notice from the province, even for non-heat dome-type temperatures, allowed them to be more prepared.
We had plenty of warning.
It's all added up to sizzling summer sun without the tragedies of the heat dome.
The coroner says it's not aware of any heat-related deaths in the province over the past few days. And Island Health says there was only one trip to its emergency departments where heat was the primary complaint.
And for those soaking up the rays, do it while you can.
We're at the end of this first heat wave of summer. We had a semi-strong ridge of high pressure move in.
With the dog days of summer ahead, more heat is on the horizon. And this time around, Islanders are ready. Robert Buffum, CTV News, Victoria.
Want everybody to stay safe in that. And of course, the traumatic incident that happened 1 year ago. Again, 24 deaths here in the Victoria area, greater Victoria, I should say, as well as more than 600. That would be including those here across the entire province during last year's heat dome event. We spoke with Troy Clifford, who's president of BC Ambulance Paramedics and Dispatchers of BC, that union, a couple of months after. And he told us at that point that what had taken place was so traumatic for first responders and even for call takers that at that time, approximately one-third of all of BC's ambulance dispatchers were either off work or were on modified duty due to traumatic events and traumatic strain or stress injuries in terms of their emotional health, their psyche, not merely because of the heat dome, but certainly including it, but because of all of the stresses during COVID-19. It's now been a year. We spoke with Mr. Clifford again this morning to get his thoughts on how things are now.
Like I said, or I said to some others that on Saturday and over the weekend, you know, we've seen what I'm advised is significant increases in call volume related to obviously the weather and people out and about and opening up a summer essentially. But what I understand is that there was a number of times where people were trying to access 911 to call for an ambulance. And the transfers were delayed because of not enough dispatchers or emergency call takers and the ambulance dispatchers to staff all the positions. So that was causing some backlog for access to emergency medical call takers. And that's a direct result of not having enough staff from our, you know, we've talked about this before. I talked with Al about just how, you know, our short staffing, but also delays in getting ambulances, sounds like, that are where that, you know, I talk to the paramedics and dispatchers a lot, and that's the reports that over the province on the weekend, we've seen a lot of out-of-service ambulances just because we didn't have enough staff to. And that's not a new problem, but it's been highlighted again, I think, with the increased call volume. But, you know, we always see that in summer, and we're seeing paramedics and dispatchers off with psychological injuries.
So that's still the case.
Illnesses, and that's not helping the situation either when we're already running at below optimum or below full staffing, right?
Yeah, when you're running skeleton crews, so to speak, I know we've seen it happen here in the media world too. You get less and less staff, and then those staff need a break, or as you mentioned, maybe it's a medical leave, maybe it's something else, or it's just normal summer vacations. Now you're already taking a less than ideal situation and making it worse just because of time off.
Yeah, like that's where people, obviously, their kids are off and their situations are different, so they take time off in the summer. And so this is our premium leave times, but we still have minimum staffings and that. But our real biggest issue is that we're not even staffing to our capacity because of our not able to recruit into this profession. And that's affecting communities. Like when you talk about the island, I'll just focus on that for you right now. A lot of the smaller communities, you know, are medium or urban in that, are, you know, short of, you know, if say a community had three ambulances or two, quite often they're down to one or at times not even at one, and then they're covered by other communities. So that puts additional pressure on, you know, the Victoria crews and the metro or the urban Victoria and surrounding areas. You know, it's a busy, busy community, and it's like the Okanagan where I'm at right now. You know, people, your numbers go up significant in a tourist place like Victoria. People are visiting.
Right.
And we've had two, well, the whole island, but BC in general, but, you know, some of the targeted areas that you see population growth during the summers and the vacation times. And that really impacts our ability when you're already running at stretched out resources because of some not staffed, right? So it goes back to that recruitment issue that we've been talking about, getting people into the profession, and we just haven't been able to meet those demands because of the real reason is because of our precarious, or we rely on about 50-50, half of our service, 4,500 paramedics and dispatchers rely on an on-call precarious model where they're not making the wages and benefits. So they're choosing to other careers and professions. And that's really one of our biggest challenges is we're not competitive in this dire human resources issue that isn't unique to us. But when you're talking about frontline healthcare and public safety, if we don't have enough paramedics and healthy paramedics and dispatchers, then the system doesn't work, and that's worrisome, obviously.
Troy Clifford is the president of BC Ambulance Paramedics and Dispatchers Union. Spoke with Warren Dean, who was filling in for Al Farabee on the program earlier today. 1 year later, the deadly heat dome event, 24 people killed here in Victoria in one event. The deadliest weather event, I suspect, Victoria has ever seen, at least in modern history. I can't think of any blizzard or any windstorm or any snowstorm or any singular event that saw 24 human beings lose their lives within Greater Victoria. And yet, according to the BC Coroner's final report on it, that was the number of people who lost their lives in this region, with the heat being the cause. We're going to take a quick break. Talking about another concern that's been here, that's been discussed for years and years in our community. Are the speed limits too high? Do we need to differentiate better between what should be quiet residential streets and major arterial routes? Fred Haynes, Mayor of Saanich, was on with us earlier today talking about a report that will be coming before Saanich Council this, is it tomorrow? Anyway, I'll find out in just a second with all of you. Don't go anywhere.
Keeping you informed, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Back on the air here at CFAX 1070, Fred Haynes, Mayor of Saanich, on earlier today talking about a report that will come before Saanich Council regarding the prospect of lowering residential speed limits in some areas. There would be A's and B's, different kinds of roads. Let's hear what he had to say.
Glad to be here, and we've got some great news for Saanich.
Okay, we got some great news. Well, let's start with the great news.
So on Monday, July the 4th...
That's what it is. It's not this week. It's Monday, July the 4th. My apologies. I thought it might be this week. I kind of heard it out of one ear.
We have a report coming to council which is going to present a Saanich Council speed limit establishment policy. That's a long way of saying we're going to be working on road safety across our region. And it's going to break into two types of approaches. One is a type A street and one is a type B street. And this is based on considerable work that started in 2018-19. But here we go. For type A streets, which we're going to define as streets without a continuous yellow line, which people also call residential streets, so no continuous yellow line, or if they have a neighborhood bikeway, or if they're in what we call our active transportation plan, and that map is on the Saanich website, those streets are going to 30K per hour.
So the bikeway would be the factor that would actually lower the speed limit there.
Okay, so residential streets, so we're talking more of their areas where lots of cars may be parked, lots of kids may be playing.
Right.
Those issues of safety are kind of going to be diffused a little bit because we're going to 30.
Correct. And Vision Zero would say that one of the areas to work on reducing injuries, fatalities, is car speed. So that's one of the things we can do. There's other things such as education, signage, and enforcement, and that's also being looked at in this plan. But what is also interesting is that we're going to, pending council's approval, move on a study of Type B streets. And the Type B streets are not neighborhood streets where you have a network. They're corridors. And we've identified a series of corridors where we're going to do a data-informed public input and police-informed approach to have in speed reductions on our corridors. And when I mention some of these corridors, I think they'll be familiar to our residents because they are corridors where we've seen accidents recently, and it's part of our ongoing plan to improve road safety but also encourage mode shifts so people feel safer on the streets when they're cycling or walking or going to and from transit. So it's multi-focused. I'd like, if I may, to read you some of those corridors.
Sure.
So Emily Carr Drive from Chatterton Way to Royal Oak Drive, West Saanich Road from Blandford Avenue to Wilkinson, Old West Saanich Road and Oldfield Road, and this is interesting because it goes from West Saanich Road to the boundary with Central Saanich, and we're trying to link up with our neighboring municipalities. And then we'd do Prospect Lake Road, Spartan Road from Burnside Road to Oldfield Road, so that makes a corridor there. And then moving away from the rural area into Gorge Road West, Harriet Road to Admirals, and then Tillicum Road from Gorge Road West to Kerry Road. And then a couple more, Harriet Road, Boleskine Road, and Saanich Road from Gorge Road West to Mackenzie Avenue, and then Cedar Hill Crossroad from the boundary of Oak Bay, one of our neighbors, to Mackenzie Avenue.
That's where that tragic incident happened with the young man, the 16-year-old, who was within sight of home, got off the bus, and there was the crosswalk there with the amber lights that could be activated at Cedar Hill Crossroad, just for those who aren't aware, the tragic death that took place recently.
And then the last one, again, is linking up to Oak Bay. It will be from Highway 17 to the boundary of Oak Bay, from Sayward Road, Fowler Road, Cordova Bay Road, Ash Road, Groundville Road, Ferndale Road.
I hope everybody's keeping track of this.
Arbutus Road and Cadbury Bay. And all these will be presented at council on Monday, and the report will be live on our website on Wednesday.
Okay. Fred Haynes, Mayor of Saanich, we're talking about reducing the speed limits on some of these roads and corridors. So the other side of this coin is it going to make that big of a difference? Is it going to be maybe a bigger problem? Are people going to be frustrated? Are people going to speed more? Because 30 is fairly slow, and I understand the thinking behind it for safety issues, but there's the other side of the coin. Is it going to create issues as well?
Part of the education piece that goes on, and in The Rubber Hits the Road, that is an item that they talk about, is that if people don't think it's an appropriate speed on the road, there can be a little bit of impatience, and there can be traffic hopping, where a car will pass you and come inside, then pass the next car. And once you get uncertainty or unpredictability or reduced predictability in the traffic flow, that can be one of the causes of collisions. However, we think with the right signage, one of the key things here is the signage. And this is where I'm going to share a little bit of disappointment. You probably know that we moved to ask the province, along with several other municipalities, for a pilot project where several municipalities in a go would have a pilot project to reduce their residential speeds to 30. When it's consistent going from one municipality to another, you get better driver education, better driver awareness. However, the province decided not to do that. We were informed that in November last year, having waited a year for that answer. And so in February 22, we decided to move forward with our own Vision Zero establishment. However, the point you made is noted, and we are fully informed of that, and that will come down to enforcement, education, engineering. Separate to this, there's another report coming, which is going to be about traffic calming, options for traffic calming. Because if we do see that there are some roads that are particularly not compliant, then perhaps that would be a candidate for traffic calming.
As far as enforcement goes, do you have enough staff? We have issues already with our, you know, frontline workers. Is there enough staff to enforce a change such as widespread as this?
Well, this talks to two things. It's enforcement and education and signage. We have four traffic safety divisions. They're on 7 days a week through the day. We do have a robust amount of staff.
See, the nice thing about Saanich is that it didn't spend the last decade trying to destroy its police department in a political war of attrition by starving it of every penny that it could at every opportunity. So Saanich has a police department with the flexibility to be able to increase enforcement on these and other arteries. Unlike, unfortunately, the city of Victoria, which we are still playing catch-up on in terms of trying to reestablish adequate levels of funding for its police force. So Mayor Haynes, being the co-chair of the Saanich Police Board, would be well aware that they do have the resources that would be required for increased enforcement if indeed the people of Saanich see fit to go down that road.
But Saanich is a very large municipality.
That's also true.
And the police will be using roving enforcement. But this is something we're going to go ahead and do, and that's one of the things that we are looking at. What are the expectations on enforcement? However, if you have an accident on a road that's signed 30 and you're going 50, there's some serious penalties.
Right. Fred Haynes, Mayor of Saanich. Again, just give us the date and time, how people, the public can...
Report comes to council Monday, July the 1st. We can access it Wednesday the 6th, I believe. At least I think that's what he's about to say. Let's double check.
She'd be signing our residential or neighborhood roads or those with cycling corridors, on if you like. And then in terms of the Type B, it's going to be a study that undertakes really an analysis of how we're going to go.
Cedar Hill Crossroad going down to 30 the whole way. That would be significant. By the way, for those of you who don't know where that is, that's the corner of Shelbourne where there's the McDonald's there and the Coast Capital Savings. And across the street, it used to be a Pizza Hut, I think. I'm not sure what's there now. I think it turned into a Tim Hortons years ago. Just for those of you who don't know the area. So that entire road all the way west to McKenzie would go down to 30. That would cover the area where that death took place of that teenager a few months back. I wonder what that would do to overall traffic flows in terms of diversion, though. Like, I wonder how many cars would avoid those roads and what would happen with adjacent roads as the traffic volume sort of spilled over into adjacent areas. That's one of the things that we saw in terms of the slowdown and the diversion from Richardson Street, that main east-west artery that we have here in Victoria. Not sure.
A study that undertakes really an analysis of how we're going to go forward with that. And that, again, will be a study that starts underway in 2022, this year, in the fall. And then,
so it sounds, at least they're not going to just do it like Victoria feels like it might. I'm sorry, that's just how Victoria does things. You know, like in Saanich, Fred Haynes says, yeah, we're going to do a study and we're going to see how this works. And if it shows that there's going to be an improvement, we'll talk about it. We'll consult the public. And hey, we might even do it. It's backwards from what happens here in Victoria, where we all just wake up one day and look on the agenda and council's going to do something like 2 days from now and nobody has time to organize any opposition. And we'll find out if it works or not by dealing with the problems it creates for several years. Thank you, Saanich, for being backwards when it comes to Victoria.
Report back in the first or second quarter of 2023.
All right. Great stuff. Fred Haynes, Mayor of Saanich, thank you so much for joining.
So there we go. Will it work? I'm actually not sure. The one concern that I have is that if we downzone too many roads, and I know that's the wrong term, in terms of speed, the issue of traffic volume will still be there. Traffic will still back up. You're going to see more cars going down side streets than you otherwise would. Yeah, I'm going to have to think about this one for a sec. What do you folks think about all this? Let's do some open lines. 250-386-1161, star 1070, a free call on your wireless device. My board is open and clear. I'd like some reaction and feedback to this. Let's do that next.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, text messages starting to flow in. The board's filling up as well. Your chance to sound off at 250-386-1161. I don't have a position on this one. I don't think I've heard enough to make up my mind one way or the other. I'm interested in what all of you think about what we've heard so far. Tim weighing in, saying Sanish speed limits, a solution, looking for a problem. There's one point of view. Ever notice how in the moves to lower speed limits, they never present any sort of data? One texter writes, showing that there is a problem. Well, it's difficult for us to measure near misses and congestion and whatnot. We can surely measure pedestrian fatalities and injuries. If that is the case, then probably the most dangerous intersection, or one of them, that we see on the South Island is the corner of Bay and Blanchard. And there is a, you know, a really super special newly upgraded crosswalk at King's, what, like 100 meters or so north of that. So in terms of infrastructure and what can be done, driver error, it would seem, is difficult to completely account for in all cases, or at least some. Morning, Adam. I'm definitely not looking forward to the new speed limits, a texter writes. When I go 30 in a school zone, cyclists pass me. Where is their speed limit? Well, they're not supposed to be passing you, texter. Tamara writes, good morning, Adam. I'm definitely not looking forward to the new speed limits. When I go 30 in a school zone, cyclists pass me. Where is their speed limit? And why are we treating everyone like they're in grades K to 5? Those are the only school zones where 30K is mandatory. Is that true? I guess that would make sense, wouldn't it? Texter 107010, Mark writes, bull crap. 30 is so painful to drive, I can't do it. Police can't even enforce the crime now. They have to enforce this crap. Thanks, says Mark. Mark, I think that you are confusing Victoria Police and Saanich Police. Two very different police forces, treated very differently by their respective councils. Victoria Council has treated Vic PD far more often than I would prefer as a problem that needed to be solved, i.e. starved out of existence, whereas Saanich has recognized, well, as long as I've been doing this job, that the people of Saanich value their peace and their safety, and they're willing to invest the appropriate amount in a police force commensurate to those desires. Another texter at 107010, Peter writes, the traffic around Richardson, down here in Victoria, is ridiculous. They made Richmond a freeway in front of a school, which, by the way, is 30. Enforcement is non-existent, says Peter. Let's go to the phone lines and see what everybody thinks. Wayne is up first, then it'll be Shane. Hey, Wayne, go ahead.
Yeah, Frank Haynes should take his police hat off and just put his mayor's hat back on. He should stay out of policing issues, which includes traffic. What's going to happen? You know, whatever sign is posted, police are not going to be stopping anybody that's doing 11 or 10 kilometers over the limit. So you may as well just put the sign at 40.
Well, it'll be 30 from what they're saying.
Well, it'd be 30, but you think they're going to enforce if you do it 31, they're going to be pulling.
Well, no, but if you put the sign at 40, they'd go 50 then.
Yes, that's okay. 50 is reasonable. I mean, he's saying this is to prevent accidents. Accidents happen at any speed, you know. A forklift can forward or go forward and run somebody over or back up, and it's only doing like 2 kilometers an hour.
Can it, though? I'd get out of the way if a forklift was going towards me. It's not very fast. I could win. I think I could get out of the way.
No, not if it's backs into you, buckles your knees, and crushes your ankles.
Well, that's a pretty specific set of circumstances, Wade, if we're imagining this.
Yeah, but anyways, it's like, it's just ridiculous, and we're going to do studies, and he's naming off, like, what was it, 24 roads? I mean, Cedar Hill.
Crossroad. Cedar Hill Crossroad.
Cedar Hill Crossroad, if it's 30 or any road, like that main artery road, that's a main thoroughfare, it's down to 30. Me, along with everybody else, are going to take other roads, and then the citizens that live on those roads are going to be pissed off because there's a million cars going down their road now.
Mm. I'm trying to think, where is the nearest crossroad to Cedar Hill Cross? Like if you wanted to take an alternate, where would you go? I'm just thinking here. Look at the map.
Go up to Blenkinsop.
Yeah? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'll take
or just
look.
Stay on Mackenzie. Yeah. But then Frank or Fred will probably say, oh, yeah, the people are going too fast on Mackenzie. We better lower it down to 50. I mean, you look at the Inland Island Highway was 120, and then a bunch of whiners got in there. Oh, it's too fast. It's too fast. So, you know what people are driving on there now? They lowered it to 110. They're still doing 120, 125. It's ridiculous. It's just a sign. And in my opinion, the police have better things to do than go out patrolling looking for grandma and grandpa doing like 40 kilometers in a 30 zone. You know, there's far more pressing things to look after, like police work.
Wayne, you're the first call in. Thanks for the reaction. 250-386-1161. Shane is up next. Hey, Shane, you're on the air. How you doing?
Good, Adam. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I agree with Wayne. I mean, I think it's ridiculous. I think the vehicles nowadays are way better. They're science, you know, they're better visibility, everything. And I just think it comes down to being kilometers per hour instead of miles per hour. I'm sure they wouldn't have 25 mile an hour signs around, but it's okay to have a 40K sign up, even though it's the same speed. It's just like the Souk Road years ago. It went from 50 miles an hour, and then when we went to metric, it went to 60.
Did it really? So was Souk Road 50 miles an hour? I didn't know that.
It was at one time.
Wow.
Ago, and then, yeah, I know, because I wrote a math test, and when we did the change, and I put 60 down because everybody was learning to drive then, and then even the teacher said, I'll give you guys that one, because that's what they did on the Souk Road.
Wow.
So it's weird. I mean, it should be what it is. The vehicles are better. The tires are better. I just think it's ridiculous. Everybody's trying to micromanage everybody, not taking away anybody being competent in the world. That's what the politicians are doing.
Shane, thanks for the reaction. Take care.
You bet. Thanks.
All right, 250-386-1161. I didn't know that. By the way, for those of you out there a little younger, you never learned Imperial in terms of miles per hour. 50 miles per hour is 80 kilometers per hour. So Souk Road, which is now either 50 or 60 kilometers per hour, depending on the area, that also has signs for poor weather that advise even lower speeds. I didn't know that Souk Road used to be 80K. Wow. All right. Quick break. More open lines after this. 250-386-1161, *1070, a free call on your wireless device. Raising questions like this one on my text message. Hi, Adam. What's wrong with installing speed cameras then? How do we... Look, if we want to make this the law, we should be able to enforce the law. If we wish to enforce the law because we've changed the law, how are we actually going to do that with high degree of regularity? Is that possible? Should we bring in automated speed camera enforcement? Here's the thing. Everybody says they want lower speed limits. They're like, yeah, I want this. Or a lot of people do. And they say, all right, let's bring in speed cameras. They're like, whoa, no. Why? Why do you care? If you support the law and you plan to obey the law, then what do you care if somebody else gets photo radar tickets? Unless you're just saying that you're okay with lowering the speed limits and you're just saying that you would obey the law because you're secretly thinking that you could speed if you still wanted to and simply not get caught. Something to think about? Quick break. More reaction after this.
This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Texter 1070-10 writes, this is simply an emotional knee-jerk reaction to a couple of tragic incidents that is going to have much further unintended consequences for road safety. Texter writes, I'd be surprised if we don't see an increase in collisions. Another texter at 1070-10 writes, just great. Why don't they turn the entire city into a school zone? Better yet, drop the speed limit to 10 kilometers per hour and no one will ever get killed. Texter writes, how about enforcing the speed limits we already have in place? Hi, Adam. James writes on my text message, how does council square the safety aspect with reducing the carbon footprint? They are diametrically opposed. As commute times increase, so does carbon load in the environment. Also, is this really a problem that needs fixing? The variable is the attention of the driver at any speed, says James. Well, James, the carbon emissions question is actually an interesting one, and it actually also leads into the issue with road safety in terms of reduced injuries or chance of injury if there's an accident. Little bit of physics here, but bottom line, the way that velocity works in terms of kinetic energy, if you want to double the speed of something, it takes four times as much energy to get it up to that rate. If you want to triple the speed of something, it takes nine times as much energy to get it up to that rate. A bullet that travels three times faster than another bullet will have nine times the kinetic energy. You can also work backwards and figure out that if you want to speed up that bullet or that car or that whatever to triple the speed, you're going to need nine times the amount of energy, be it from gasoline or electricity or gunpowder or whatever, to accelerate that mass up to that velocity. That's just how physics works. We can't beat physics. Same way, something traveling with nine times as much kinetic energy, if it's going triple the speed, when it hits you, is going to do a lot more damage because it has a lot more energy. Now, we're not talking about reducing the speed limits by 60%, so it wouldn't be like one third. On the other hand, though,
If we go from 50 down to 30, that's a pretty big reduction. We're talking a 40% reduction in speed. So we'd be at, if we wanted to increase it from 30 up to 50, that'd be 1.6. So we'd have the square, so that'd be like 2.7, just under three times as much kinetic energy to go 50 kilometers per hour as it is to go 30 kilometers per hour. That works both ways. That works in terms of gasoline consumption. Now, your engine's not going to be 100% efficient. I'm talking about upper bounds here. And also the amount of kinetic energy the car carries as it goes down the road, which is going to be imparted on anything it hits. And hopefully it's not going to be a soft human being, because we know how that ends. So bottom line, what I'm trying to say is, yes, it's true that trips would take longer in cars that are going 30 instead of 50, but it'd be a mistake to assume that those cars would actually burn more fuel. They'd actually burn less. And it's simply the way that physics works. And if that's not intuitive, then I apologize. If I haven't made sense in what I've just tried to explain, then I apologize as well. But that's sort of how it works. And that's the reason they want to go 50 or 30 instead of 50. It doesn't seem like that big of a difference to you and me. But when you crunch the numbers and do the math, there's a lot less kinetic energy in a car going 30 than the same car would have doing 50. It's like one third the kinetic energy, little more, but just neighborhood ballpark. So that means less gas burned, and it means less damage if it hits something. Bottom line. Hi, Adam. Texter writes, "Our Tom here in Saanich might spawn a new country song. I can't go 30K. If people can't drive safely at 50K, they shouldn't be driving. I, for one, will continue to drive a safe speed depending upon the conditions. Too many rules and traffic calming only creates frustration." Another texter writes to me, "Set Richardson Street free." Yeah, I wonder if that'll actually happen. What do you think? Will people still be angry about Richardson Street, say, a year from now with a new council? And for all we know, it might be a completely new council. The mayor will probably be somebody who was sitting on council beforehand, whether it's Stephen Andrew, Marion Alto, or Ben Isett still might run for mayor. He hasn't said that he won't. He hasn't ruled it out. We don't know. But other than that, it might be completely new members around the Victoria Council table after the election. I wonder if they will reverse things like Richardson Street and some of the other infrastructure that has spawned more criticism than others. Not clear at this time. My board's clear again. If you want to call in and weigh in on this at 250-386-1161 star 1070. Excuse me. Getting piles of text messages, though. "Good day, Adam," a texter writes. "As a contractor on the streets of the CRD every day, what Victoria has done to Richardson Street is horrible and dangerous." It's funny, we're doing a segment on Saanich speed limits, and people are texting in about how bad Victoria is. That probably says something. "I live and work in Fairfield," the texter writes. "When the schools are in, trying to get from Beacon Hill, Cook Street over to Oak Bay is frustrating at best. Beside the frustration, it's dangerous with passing through two school zones. I noticed drivers' frustration with speeding, running lights, and diverting on the side streets. I know you've talked about this many times, but my boots on the ground comment, thanks," says a texter. Let's go next to Calvin. Calvin, you're on the air. What do you make of this idea?
My question is, especially for Victoria, from what I'm understanding, how much stuff is actually being done for the environment, and how many things are being done on whim, you know, like personal want? My understanding was with the streets that were to be with the lower speed limits and whatnot, engineering said, here's the ones we suggest, and city councilors each individually put in their 2 cents on what streets they would like to see lowered. I don't know. It's kind of an odd thing. Sure, lower speed limits and stuff, it's fine. And then get all the cars off all the side streets and stick them all onto a main street, so, you know, they take longer and wind up idling more in traffic and do all these half-assed things. I mean, it's the Victoria way now. City council, you can't do it, half-ass it, you know? Mm. It just, well, how many things do we have that were a great idea, you know, like they're going to be revolutionary, we're going to do all this wonderful stuff, and then it just kind of fizzles out because it's not feasible, you know? Invite everybody to Victoria because we're going to house them all, and now we're dealing with the mess.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just wondering which city councilor is going to step up and say, well, let them eat cake, and we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. It's an odd thing. On the Canada Day celebration part, I really have to commend them for, you know, bringing in reconciliation and everything else into it. I am looking forward to see how the canoeing trip works out. You know, one of those things that you never practice on getting out of one and getting into one and all those other fun things. Yeah. I still say it would be interesting if First Nations refused them landing.
Was that you that texted me that yesterday? I saw that text message and I was going to read it out, but I thought, no, people would think that I was being needlessly provocative. You imagine if Lisa Helps and them came across from the Delta to Ship Point in the canoe and the Lekwungen speaking people said, no, you can't come onto shore. Like, could you imagine? I'm right now, I'm just going to tell you, if they said no, Lisa Helps wouldn't care. She'd come on shore anyway, and then she'd berate them and criticize them in front of everybody because they're no longer useful to her. That's my prediction for if they ever actually tried that, she would absolutely browbeat them in public in front of everyone, because I don't think she actually cares that much about all this stuff. I think that she's playing a role. That's my strong suspicion based on years of covering this, as well as a mountain of evidence that I could cite if necessary, but I really do think that would happen. It never will, so we're always just engaging in supposition, but I digress.
Years ago, I suggested they were talking about things to beautify the city. I said, wouldn't it be great if we had statues of prominent First Nations people throughout Victoria's history put around the city with a nice plaque explaining things, who they were in the area and everything else? And she just kind of said, no, it's a stupid idea. And in not so many words, but I was...
But, yeah,
You know, it was pretty amazing. But, yeah, I agree.
It won't happen, though. The Lekwungen-speaking peoples, they will do everything they can to make sure that this goes well. And I think that it will go well. You know, there are a lot of things that could go wrong here. I don't think the Lekwungen-speaking peoples in their own protocol is one of them. There's a million other things that could go wrong, though, and I'll be watching that closely.
I think that's exactly it. I think if anything is going to go wrong, it's going to come out of the city councilors. I think that a lot of the photo ops, there's one for you. A lot of the photo ops this council pulls off are just amazing. You know, let's get our pictures with these people, and then we're just going to shove them under the rug. Let's use these people for a while, then shove them under the rug. We're in a bad sitcom of really bad writers that can't figure out what, and yeah, it's a mess, and all you can do is sit back and eat popcorn. And it's pathetic that people know of Victoria and its nightmare that it's been going through for 8 years on and off on the other side of Canada. How do you guys deal with all that crap? And it's kind of like, well, it's like Brussels sprouts when you're a kid. They're forced on you. And if you don't like it, they just give it to you for breakfast.
Like Picnic Point. Calvin, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. 250-386. Can you imagine if they said no? We'd like to come ashore. No, go away. Oh, now that'll never happen. That's too crazy, even for the sitcom that we're trapped in. But, you know, I can imagine what the reaction would be. And I'm serious when I say that's what the reaction would be. Now, it'll never happen. So we never actually have a way to test this particular theory. But I think that I'm just waiting for all of this to be over. We got like 4 months left, give or take, and it's pretty much impossible for things to get worse, regardless of who wins the next election. And yeah, the sooner we can all just forget about all this, I think the better off we'll all be. Now, I do have some people taking me to task on what I was talking about with kinetic energy, gasoline consumption, and cars. People reminding me that highway speed can be more efficient than residential speed. The one element that you have to remember, though, texters, in terms of what you're telling me, and you're making some great points on my text messages, it's the stopping and the starting. If you're going 30, it means that you have to burn that much gas to accelerate your mass up to that velocity. And then your brakes will convert that kinetic energy into heat energy. It's why your brake, your rotors and your brake pads heat up as much as they do. It's why the material of them is pretty important. And when you want high performance ones, you'll have special materials and composite materials and whatnot that are meant for heat transfer to dissipate heat as fast as possible. That's why on race cars, you'll see dual sets of brake pads. It's not to increase the friction cross section on the rotor. It's to allow more heat to dissipate more quickly. But I digress. So if you're going 30, you'll accelerate up to 30, and then you lose that energy by braking at the next stop sign, the next light. Then you accelerate up to 30, you lose that energy by braking at the next stop sign, the next light. You're still only using about a third of the energy to accelerate up to 30 and then losing that off into the air that you would if you were going 50 On the highway, you don't have stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. So that's the difference, texters, for those of you that are sending me that. You also have to remember that fuel efficiency is not the same as fuel consumption. You can burn piles of fuel at high efficiency going very quickly in a controlled highway environment without you having to stop and start all the time. But every time you touch that brake, what you're doing is you're taking the energy and the gasoline that you bought at the store and you're firing it off into the air as infrared radiation. That is literally what brakes do. We usually don't think of it that way. We don't think of our brakes as wasting the energy that we bought at the gas pump. But in a very real sense, that is exactly what happens. Let's go to Caroline. Hey, Caroline, is that you?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, how you doing? Somebody asked me about you the other day.
Yeah, I don't live in Victoria anymore. I'm like way up island now.
Yeah, but you're okay?
Yeah, I'm okay, but we had to stay at the Ocean Island Backpackers in for one night, and it was like a closet. We slept in a closet.
Yeah.
Because that was the room. I don't know how they got the bunk bed inside this closet. It must have been a major, you know, undertaking. But anyways, there was no ladder to get up to the top bunk, and you just take a nosedive and wish for the best. Whatever, but it was horrible and expensive.
Well, you're still with us, though. That's good.
Yeah, I'm still with you, but just things need to change. The government needs to change, and you know, the housing crisis in Victoria is so, so bad. It's really, and not only that, they're like view towers, you know, like I know that they, you know, they have ads on Craigslist and stuff like that. And, but they play games with people. Like they've got international students that are get first dibs on the suites in there. I think I mentioned this before, but and she had us on this list from hell that lasts forever, and we were number 30 on it. And I said, look at, you know, like we need housing like really bad, and I don't know what the gist of it is, because they kept advertising now available right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Underlined in green on Craigslist, and mm-hmm. and it's not just the one ad; it's on several pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, seriously, you know? And there's nothing. When they start asking for one bedrooms in the $3,000 range, seriously.
Well,
all these giant investment corporations that are buying up all the apartments in Victoria, all of them, and then the hiking, and then they do renovations or what have you, and you know you have people traipsing down the hallway, workmen constantly and stuff like that, and you're thinking in your apartment you can hear all of this going on, and it's like, am I next, right? That kind of thing.
Well, I have to run, Carolyn, but I'm glad you're okay.
I don't mean to be so negative, but seriously, the John Horgan needs to really think about this.
Oh, I'm sure he has. I'm sure it weighs on the premier heavily. Same thing with the doctor situation. You can tell that he feels frustrated about this and he wants to do something about it. I'm just not sure anybody knows exactly what to do right now. Everything the government does seems to make things worse somehow. Anyway, glad to hear you're okay, Carolyn. Quick break. We're back right after this talking sales tax for online purchases July the 1st, Friday. What changes? Don't go anywhere.